Welcome to Exploring Bible Prophecy with our host and teacher, Steve Butler. Today, our study is in the chronological series of end time events. Let's open our Bibles and prepare to explore Bible prophecy.
Hello, and welcome once again to Exploring Bible Prophecy. We are in the introductory step, or stage, if you will, in our worksheet. It's a 30-point worksheet covering the chronological sequence of end-time events. And we have been spending the last several programs kind of setting the stage, building a foundation of understanding of really why these 30 end-time events had to take place. And if we don't go back to Genesis, which is what our introduction is all about, if we don't go back to Genesis, and then from there, having gotten our understanding to build a little bit of foundation, we really cannot see the whole flow of God's plan here and why there had to be a rapture, why there had to be a tribulation, why there had to be a second coming of Christ to judge the world, and then Christ to set up a 1,000-year kingdom, and then why there had to be a great white throne judgment at the end of it to judge the unrighteous of all time, from Cain in the garden, or Cain in the beginning of Genesis, to be correct, all the way through to the last person that was resurrected to stand at that terrible judgment, because all of those unrighteous of all time will then be thrown into the lake of fire. That's the second death. You're not judged immediately upon your death. No one is. When a Christian today dies, he goes up in the rapture, and at that point, Jesus, because he's been resurrected, will judge him there. All the unrighteous have to wait until the end of the millennial kingdom. So if, for instance, you died at the beginning of Genesis, you've had to wait, today would be roughly 6,000 years for that judgment. So the unrighteous are treated in a quite different way, but everyone has to stand at judgment at some point in time, whether they're righteous or they're unrighteous. And in that regard, everybody lives forever. There's no such thing as annihilation theory where somebody dies and it's just, there's nothing left forever and ever. Every person, the Bible tells us, who has ever lived will stand in their resurrected body to stand judgment, and then will go into two different dimensions. They will either be with God in a glorious paradise, in the presence of God the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, or they will live forever separated from the love of God the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And that's what we call the lake of fire, which we kind of euphemistically just call hell. Terrible place of torment for eternity. So everybody lives forever. So we got into our introduction here, and we were in Ezekiel. We had established the bookends of a perfect state when God created everything in 6 days. Heaven and earth were in a perfect state. Then we went to the end of Revelation and saw that once again, heaven and earth are in a perfect state. So we have that hope to look forward to, that all the crazy stories and the periodicals and the movies and the books that tell us that the earth is going to destroy itself and mankind is going to be destroyed, because we're either going to die from plagues and diseases or we're going to kill each other with nuclear weapons. None of that is true. There will be wars. There will be plagues. Yes, the Bible tells us that, but it will not wipe mankind out. God has a glorious plan for mankind into eternity, and he tells us that in his precious book, if we'll just take the time to study it. But in between those two periods of perfection, the past and the future, we have this period of time where man has fallen because Satan first fell from Lucifer as one of the covering cherubs, one of the chief angels created by God in heaven, has fallen in the sense that he wanted to become God himself. And God has punished him. We read that in Genesis chapter 3, has cast him basically to the earth. He is the prince of the earth now. This is his kingdom on earth today. It's Satan's kingdom. We know that because when Jesus was baptized in the Jordan by John the Baptist, he then went into the wilderness, and at the end of 40 days, when a human being would be totally wasted, if you will, Satan then tempted him four times, and one of the temptations was to give him back the earth if Jesus would simply bow the knee and worship Satan. So we know that he has the earth. The Bible tells us that he is the prince and the power. So this is not Jesus' earth right now. He could take it any moment if he wanted to, and he will, but he doesn't do that until the tribulation period. So this is Satan's earth. If we say that it's Satan's earth, we have to understand, therefore, that Satan is a real entity that needs to be respected, not feared, because we don't fear this because we are a child of God through Jesus Christ. But we are to respect him because he is very powerful. And the Bible tells us about how Michael did not even cast dispersions against him when he encountered him. And of course, Michael is one of the chief angels as well. So we need to understand that relationship. He is to be respected. So we got into Ezekiel chapter 28 in our last program, and suggested that you look through that passage starting at verse 12, because it says, take up a lamentation, God speaking to Ezekiel, take up a lamentation over the king of Tyre. And we pointed out that in this chapter 28, if you look at verse 2, that's actually talking about the leader of Tyre, the prince of Tyre. And then when you go over to verse 12, even though it says king of Tyre, the whole description is very clearly talking about Satan. And you may say, well, that's a stretch. I don't see where you're getting that from. You just kind of made that up. And yes, the language is kind of similar to something you might think of Satan, but I really wonder about that. Well, God gave us another example. And we're not going to go there for the sake of time, and that would be too much of an in-depth, because you can really have a whole teaching series on who Satan is, and maybe we should do that sometime. But if you go to Isaiah 14 and start at verse 9, where it says, Isaiah is talking about, it says, the king of Babylon, which at that time was not Nebuchadnezzar, but take up this lamentation against the king of Babylon, and read it, and it's very clearly talking about Satan. Very clearly talking about Satan. So what God has chosen to do through his prophets, through his writers, in this case Isaiah and Ezekiel, is to use the name of a person that readers would know. Readers would know were very evil people. And then use that to describe Satan. And that's what we have. Let's go back to Ezekiel 38 in the Old Testament. And it's talking about the description of Lucifer in the beginning, starting in verse 12, and then transitioning into Satan once he fell. So let's look at this. And we're going to read 12 through 16 to start with. So verse 12 of Ezekiel 28, son of man, take up a lamentation over the king of Tyre, and say to him, thus says the Lord God, you, and he's referring to Satan now, you had the seal of perfection, full of wisdom, and perfect in beauty. So let's remember, let's step out here just for a moment from verse 12, and remember back to the first verse in our handout, there, our worksheet. By the way, you can get that worksheet by going to the website. And I try to say this in every program because we may have new listeners or first-time listeners. You go to the website, whcbradio.org, look for the Exploring Bible Prophecy icon on the homepage, click on it, and when it goes to that intro page, you can see a hot link that lists the title of our current teaching series, and this one is Chronological Sequence of End Time Events. Click on that, and it'll bring up the worksheet. So you see the first verse at the top of our introductory section, Genesis 1:31, it said, at the end of the 6 days of creation, of which heaven and earth were created, it says, God looked at it and said, it is very good. In other words, it was perfect. So at that point in time, at the end of Genesis 1, verse 31, everything was perfect, including the angels. And one of the chief angels, the Bible tells us, is this person, this entity, I should say, called Lucifer. And it describes him here as having the seal of perfection, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. Verse 13, you were in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was your covering, the ruby, the topaz, and the diamond, the beryl, and the onyx, and the jasper, the lapis lazuli, and the turquoise, and the emerald, and the gold, the workmanship of its settings and sockets. And it says, let's step out of 13 for a moment just to make the point, the workmanship of your settings and sockets. And you have a footnote, or my Bible does anyway, that tells us that the settings is another term for tambourines, a musical instrument, and sockets was another term for flutes. So you can see that Satan was very much into music. And of course today, and we're not going to get into it here, but Satan has used music over the millennia to influence people in a negative way. And I'm not casting dispersions across music in general, but just knowing that one of the major instruments, if you will, that Satan uses to tempt people is through music. So we see that there in the middle of verse 13. So back into verse 13, and the gold, the workmanship of your tambourines and your sockets was in you. There it is. On the day that you were created, on the day that you were created, they were prepared. So I pray that you see that very important line in verse 13, because it'll be stated again in this passage that Satan is a created being. He is not a godlike figure. He's powerful. He's to be respected, but he is not a godlike figure. He is not a son of God. He is not a brother of Jesus, as one of the religions tells you that he is. Verse 14, you, again referring to Satan, you were the anointed cherub who covers. So there's that description. And it's covering means to guard. So he was one of the chief angels for God. And I placed you there. Where is he talking about? His position. He placed him in that position. And he talked about him being in Eden as well, back up at the beginning of verse 13. And I placed you there, verse 14, you were on the holy mountain of God. So there he was in heaven. The holy mountain of God is in heaven. You walked in the midst of the stones of fire. So he was talking about him being in this very exalted position among the angels, having been created by God, and he has this full access to heaven at this point. Then look at verse 15. You were blameless in your ways from the day you were created until unrighteousness was found in you. Verse 16, by the abundance of your trade, you were internally filled with violence, and you sinned. Therefore, I have cast you as profane from the mountain of God, and I have destroyed you, O covering cherub, from the midst of the stones of fire. So when it says destroyed here, it's not talking about being physically killed or in some way destroyed, to use the word the way we do today. What he's basically saying is everything that you had, Lucifer, everything that I had set you up to be the covering angel, to be one of the chief angels in heaven and so forth and so on, and then you had all these beautiful stones, I've taken that all away from you. I have cast you as profane, and I have removed you from heaven in the sense that that was his domain. It was the domain of Lucifer at the time. That now he's been cast out at this point early on in the Bible and only has access in the sense of being able to stand to make accusations against Christians, to make accusations against those who would follow Jesus Christ. And that access will be taken away, as we find out later on in this teaching series, as one of the prophetic events in the end times, that he loses access, all access to heaven during the tribulation period. So we see a clear, I believe, a very clear description of Lucifer, one of the key angels in heaven. And then we see the point in time where this created being of God becomes, if you will, to use a term today, full of himself, and becomes prideful and wants to be like God. And wanting to be like God is more clearly described in that Isaiah 14 passage, starting at verse 9, where he talks about the I wills. I will ascend to heaven. I will be like God. So that's another very clear passage you can read on your own at some point. Then I wanted to, since we're in Ezekiel 28, talking about Satan, stay in that passage and go down to verse 19. Because we talk about God having a plan that he established before he created anything. Before the creation, he had a plan from the beginning to the end. As we've already seen in Genesis to Revelation, we've talked about the bookends. And we know something happens to Satan in the end. Well, look what God says through the prophet Ezekiel in verse 19. All who know you, again, talking about Satan, all who know you among the peoples are appalled at you. You have become terrified. And there it is. And you will cease to be forever. And that takes us to Revelation, where it says that Satan will be judged and will be thrown into the lake of fire. And once he's thrown into the lake of fire, he will no longer in eternity have any influence of any sort with God and his creation. He will be totally separated. So in terms of finality, it's talking about you will cease to be forever. So that helps us as well understand back here where it says that you will be destroyed. So it's just cease to have any impact on mankind and on God's creation. So God tells you, basically, the whole life of Satan. Isn't that interesting? In Ezekiel 28, in verse 12, he starts out with the perfection in heaven of his created angel Lucifer and talks about how wonderful everything was with him. And then it says in 15, until unrighteousness was found in you. And then he talks about him being cast down. We didn't get into those passages for time. But then I took you to verse 19, and it says, you will cease to be forever. So God gives us the whole overview of Satan. So two things I would want us to take out of this Ezekiel 28 passage is, one, he's a created being. He is real. Satan is real, and he is a created being. He is not godlike. He cannot be in more than one place at a time. He deals through his fallen angels that fell with him when he became corrupted. They had the free will to follow him instead of staying with God. And then the other point is that God is in control. Even though the Bible tells us this is Satan's world today, God allows that to take place. God has a plan to deal with him, and that's what this whole 30 points is about, is God dealing basically with Satan. Because Satan's the one that's caused all of this, him working through mankind and tempting mankind as he did with Adam and Eve. But it also shows that he has a finality, that God will address it. He will deal with it in his time according to his plan, and at the exact appointed time, he will remove Satan from the picture forever. That's what we have to look forward to. And we're going to dig a little bit deeper into that here in our next program as part of the introduction. But we want to get back to a question as we do at each program. After our teaching portion, we want to get into a Q&A. And we have a question from Gary in Kingsport. And by the way, if you have a question as a listener and you'd like us to address that here on the program, please contact us. You can either contact the station using the website, whcbradio.org. I believe it's contact at, or you can contact me directly here at the station at steve@whcbradio.org. That's steve@whcbradio.org. And I'll be glad to address your question, and I would certainly prefer it be about end-time events, to be about prophecy. Whether, and I say end-time events, there's a lot of prophecy in the Old Testament that was prophesied and completed in the Old Testament. And if you have questions about that, hey, as long as it has to do with prophecy, I'm excited. So give us an opportunity, because if you have a question, you can believe other people have the same question. So let's go to Gary's question. It says, will everyone hear the trumpet for the rapture? And the short answer that we have is no, only the church is going to hear the trumpet. Only the church is going to experience the rapture. Only the church is going to see the rapture. So there's going to be an event, hopefully in the near future. We don't know exactly. The Bible tells us we can know the season, just not the day or the hour. And it's going to be a point in time where there's going to be a lot of people disappear off the face of the earth, because they're immediately going to be with Jesus at the judgment seat of Christ to receive rewards. No punishment for sin, only rewards. As God takes us away as the bride of Christ, so that we can be wedded to Him, because when the tribulation is completed, we are going to turn around from heaven and come right back with Him at least 7 years after the rapture, because that's the length of the tribulation. Come back with Him in our glorified bodies just as He is. And while He's ruling and reigning from Jerusalem as King of Kings and Lord of Lords, we're going to be, you know, for lack of a better term, vice regents, if you will, ruling and reigning, Revelation chapter 2 tells us, over the earth for Him on His behalf. So it's going to be a wonderful time for the church, as we have work to do. And we have work to do on the earth for 1,000 years. But remember, we're going to be in our glorified bodies, and time will have no meaning to us. So that's the rapture. The rest of the earth, the unbelievers that are on the earth at that point in time, are not going to hear the trumpet. They're not going to see the rapture. They're just going to have to deal with what's left over. So we went through the rapture passage in 1 Thessalonians 4, verses 13 to 18, and that particular passage is the really one of the best descriptions of the rapture. 1 Corinthians 15 is another one. John 14, 1 through 3 is another. And then there's a couple of others that we could get into at some point as well. So the rapture is a well-described fact in the New Testament. And we went to Revelation chapter 1 because in the Thessalonian, 1 Thessalonians 4 passage, it talks about a trumpet, but it doesn't go into enough detail to satisfy somebody who's, you know, looking at it, wanting to know, what is this trumpet thing? Is it literally somebody, you know, is it Herb Alpert blowing on his trumpet, if you're old enough to remember him? and it turns out that no, it's not. It's like a trumpet, and that's the key thing, is to understand when you see the word like or as, it's using an analogy, it's not the actual fact. And we see that in Revelation chapter 1. This is John the Revelator, who was John the Apostle, who is living longer than any of the other apostles. He's on the Isle of Patmos. He's been put there by the Roman Empire as punishment, so he's imprisoned on what you might call a prison island. And here is where God comes to him and gives him the book of Revelation that he's writing out. And chapter 1 is an introduction, as you might suspect, and he hears a voice. So let's go to Revelation chapter 1, verse 10. He hears a voice, and it says in verse 10, a loud voice like the sound of a trumpet. So we see that like again. So it's a voice. That's the point. And it sounds so bold, it's like a trumpet. It's loud and it's bold and it's authoritative, but it's a voice like the sound of a trumpet. And when he turns around to see where the voice is emanating from, he sees Christ in his glory. And he's described down here, 14, 15, and 16. So we know that it's Jesus. And his voice is like the sound of a trumpet. And that's where we finished in our last program, Q&A. And we want to go forward here and see if we can do a little bit more exploring about the idea of this trumpet and then get into why people will not hear it. So the idea of a trumpet being a representation of a strong voice of a command, let's go to Revelation chapter 4. So we're in Revelation 1, so simply move to the right a little bit. And we're going to finish up with Jesus telling through the angel to John about the churches, about the future of the churches. And now he's going to shift over to the tribulation period, which is yet future. And so we see John as a representation or a representative of the church being raptured. So look at verse 1 of chapter 4. After these things I looked, and behold, a door standing open in heaven. And the first voice which I heard, like the sound of a trumpet. Remember back to Revelation chapter 1, verse 10? The voice of Christ sounded like a trumpet. So I heard a voice like the sound of a trumpet speaking with me, said, come up here. Come up here, and I will show you what must take place after these things. So this is how Revelation was revealed to Apostle John, who wrote Revelation. It was a strong voice, which we know was Christ in Revelation chapter 1, and it sounded like a trumpet, and it commanded John, come up here. And let's look at one other place that lends support to what we're talking about here, about the trumpet being a voice. And let's go to a description in Revelation 11 of the two witnesses that God sends to the earth, two Jewish witnesses who are recognized as being great authority figures. We don't know who they are. The speculation is Moses and Elijah or Enoch and Elijah, but we don't know. But we do know that they are authority figures, and they prophesy the gospel to Israel during the first half of the tribulation. And it says when they finish their testimony, Revelation 11, verse 7, they finish their testimony, God allowed the Antichrist to kill them. They could not be killed before this, but then he allowed them to be killed. And in verse 11, it says, after 3.5 days, they were killed. And in verse 12, they heard a loud voice from heaven saying to them, come up here. So there's that same voice that sounded like a trumpet saying, come up here. We'll continue this in our next program Q&A. Remember, if we don't talk again, I'll be seeing you in the air.
You've been listening to Exploring Bible Prophecy with our host and teacher, Steve Butler. For more information on this or any of the Exploring Bible Prophecy programs, visit whcbradio.org. Exploring Bible Prophecy is a production of WHCB Radio.